Big color, bigger savings. It's Sherwin-Williams' biggest super sale. Get 40% off paints and stains October 17th through the 27th with prices starting at $29.39. Whether you're refreshing your interior or exterior, we've got the colors to bring your vision to life. And with delivery, getting everything to your door is easier than ever. Shop online to have it delivered or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details. Delivery available on qualifying orders.
Upgrade your laundry routine with a durable and reliable Maytag laundry pair at Lowe's. Like the new Maytag washer and dryer with performance-enhanced stain-fighting power designed to cut through serious dirt and grime. And what's great is this laundry pair is in stock and ready for delivery when you need it the most. Don't miss out. Shop Maytag in-store or online today at Lowe's.
Welcome to the Social Flight Live podcast, an audio version of our live show, hosted every Tuesday evening at 8 p.m. Eastern at socialflightlive.com. Social Flight is brought to you by Aspen Avionics, Avidyne, Continental Aerospace Technologies, Lightspeed Aviation, Tempest Aero Group, and Whip Air. And now, here's your host, Jeff Simon.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Social Flight Live. I'm Jeff Simon. We have a very important and powerful show for you this evening. Ken Lux, CEO of Flights to Freedom, is here to join us here on the show. And we're going to talk tonight about their mission and the work that he is doing to help combat and help victims of the heinous crime of human trafficking. All the work that he's doing, and also, and I think as important or more importantly, what you can do to also help in this effort, because it really is one that I think you're going to hear is something uniquely positioned where general aviation can help. Before we begin tonight's broadcast, I'd like to encourage everyone to go out and check out socialflight.com and the free mobile apps for Apple and Android devices. Just search for one word, Social Flight. We have a ton of things going on. I just today checked, and within the last week, about 250 new aviation events have been added by users like yourselves and people from all over the country and all over the world to Social Flight. So if you want to know what's happening in your local area or when you're traveling, cool things to do, places to go, destinations, you name it, it is all there. It's all free and supported by the folks right over my shoulder here that make all of this possible. In addition to that, we have courses that you can take in our FAA Learning Center for WINGS credits, as well as if you're a mechanic, you can take courses there for your IA renewal credits or just AMT, Aviation Maintenance Technician awards programs. All of it happens automatically. And again, there is no charge for anything we do here. And we have our Fly to Win Challenge where we give away prizes for your flying, where all you need to do is check in on the mobile app at any airport, you can win. We just gave away a Lightspeed Delta Zulu headset on June 1st. Very excited about that. And now we go to a very big prize happening on August 1st. We're giving away an Aspen E5 electronic flight instrument. You can win glass for your panel. If you own an aircraft, just go check that out again on Social Flight. Tonight's broadcast is brought to us by Avemco Insurance. Big thanks to Marcy Veroni and Megan Thomas over there and the entire team at Avemco. They do so much to promote aviation safety. I really want to thank them for supporting Social Flight, everything that we do, everything that they do. And for all of you, if you go to them and you mention Social Flight, they have a 5% discount. All you have to do is mention Social Flight to them when you're signing up. And there's a discount there. They can give you all the details and the fine print, everything that goes along with that. But thanks to Avemco. I really appreciate that. Now to tonight's show. Since its formation in 2024, under the leadership CEO Ken Lux, the organization Flights to Freedom has already made a significant impact on the fight against human trafficking and really what happens to those victims after they have been rescued by law enforcement. This new nonprofit organization, consisting of volunteer, licensed pilots, operational personnel, and everyone that goes to make it possible has successfully flown survivors throughout the Western United States and is urgently working to expand their reach across the nation. The Flights to Freedom mission is clear and impactful: to provide safe, expedient, and private air transportation for victims of child sex trafficking, human exploitation, and their support groups. These flights offer hope. They offer empowerment to those who are seeking freedom from human exploitation and servitude. And I can tell you, after spending time with Ken, they are so, so important. And so I appreciate your time. Please note that due to the sensitive nature of the material of tonight's show, it may not be appropriate for all viewers simply because of what we'll be discussing, the stories that will be told. I think they are very, very important stories to be told, but understand they are not easy to listen to. And so with that, I would like to thank you for joining us this evening for this. And please welcome to Social Flight Live, Flights to Freedom CEO Ken Lux. How are you doing, Ken?
I'm doing great, and thank you, Jeff, very much. It's great to be with you and your audience this evening. Really appreciate the opportunity.
Ken, I was thrilled to meet you earlier this year and get to hear some about this mission, and it really tugged at my heartstrings and I think what we all want to do in terms of giving back. There are many organizations in general aviation that do things to make our flying not just getting a $100 hamburger, but to give a bit back in the process. And this is one that strikes me as being incredibly urgent and very, very personally impactful in what you're doing, even with a single flight. Tell me your story and how you, I guess your aviation story, what brought you even into aviation, and then what actually brought you to starting Flights to Freedom.
Yeah, I started aviation. My father was in the Air Force, so I grew up around airplanes, and we had a number of different airplanes. I remember we had a 140 and a 172 and a 182, and eventually we had a Stearman, and we had some Piper aircraft. So I got to learn and be involved in aviation from a very young age, so I was very fortunate that way. And, you know, I got licensed up in high school and then continued to work on it and different ratings and things at different times. And then kind of fast forward after college, I was working in the high tech in Silicon Valley. And, you know, I always had this love for aviation, and I just had an opportunity to start an organization or a company called Lux Aviation, which is my day job. And we're a charter, we do leasing, you know, and charter aircraft, that kind of thing in Sacramento, California. And I'm also involved in a group, or I've been involved in a group for quite some time, called the Sacramento County Sheriff's Air Squadron. And it's another volunteer organization that helps our community and helps the sheriff's department and different law enforcement agencies throughout California with general aviation. And through that, we had a briefing with the FBI, local FBI office. And one of the topics was human trafficking. And as a result of that meeting, I went back, you know, with some of my friends in the air squadron that had aircraft and wanted to help. And we realized how bad this problem was. And we were trying to figure out a way that we could help with the problem. So we went back and we spoke with different law enforcement people and Child Protective Services and FBI, different law enforcement agencies and organizations that help kids. And we decided to start Flights to Freedom. And that's kind of how that started about a year ago. And, wow. You know, we've done several flights, a number of flights to help these kids. And, you know, just love to share a little more of that story with you this evening.
Tell me about that first meeting and what, because this isn't an area that I think people know a lot about. We know the concept, right? Like, you can say the concept, human trafficking, sex trafficking, things like that. These aren't terms people haven't heard of, but really understanding it is a whole different thing, and then understand what we can do to help. So tell me a little bit about what that first meeting with the FBI was.
Yeah, that's really an important question. It's the heart of what we're doing, because probably like a lot of people, I just thought, oh, human trafficking. I you know, saw the movie Sound of Freedom, which came out a few years back, and it was a really big, impactful for anti-human trafficking and to awareness. And then with our group, when we went to the FBI, And I just kind of thought, oh, okay, I've heard about that. Maybe that happens overseas or something. And what the case, the main case study that the FBI presented to our air squadron was an airline pilot. He was a captain for a major United States airline. And he was using his ability to get around the world to traffic young people or provide clients to traffickers. And so the case study that they had, and they had, spent hundreds of manpower hours to track this guy down and put him in jail. He's in prison. But what they were telling us, and they showed us the emails and the texts and everything, and what really got us going was they talked about, the challenges the FBI has to bring these people to justice and how widespread it is around the world. But then they started getting really into the weeds and they talked about specifically emails that were going back and forth with the traffickers in the Philippines and this airline pilot. And he said, well, I have a client. He wants to come over and meet a girl about 12 years old. And the pilot said, no, I think he's going to want somebody closer, a young girl about 8 years old. And, I just couldn't believe that this was true and that this was going on. And, again, you think of airline pilots as people that should have things squared away and, take care of things. They're a very important job. And I just couldn't believe it. So, as a father of two daughters, it really hit home to me. And I started thinking more. I said, wow, if this is happening like this, just blatantly, what else is going on out there? So then I started doing research and I started connecting more, digging in with the local sheriff's departments that we have and, the police departments and CPS and district attorneys locally that we have and throughout California. And we found that, yeah, this problem is just, it's really, really bad. There's worldwide, there's somewhere around 50 million people caught up in human trafficking. In the U.S., there's 200,000 or more. The kids, it's typically young girls or young women. But there's boys, there's young men involved in it. About 80% of them are women. And typically with the boys or the young men, it's forced labor or some sort of trafficking within forced labor or military service. There's all kinds of different versions of it. But we focus primarily on providing the ride. We call it rescue and reunite. So we want to, once the law enforcement agency or CPS gives us a call, the agency, then what we do is we provide that transportation home or to medical or trauma services, whatever they might need. Yeah. And at no cost to the agency with our pilots.
Yeah. To help people understand also a little bit more, because you've shared with me some of kind of how this works, because we want people to understand the situation, the problem, how to help spot it in general, and then about your organization and what you guys are doing and how to contribute to that as well. You've described to me some of the kind of scenarios of how, because you think like, how does this happen in this country? How does this happen in a way that reaches this country? We don't think of that as being a common problem compared to the like you said in the beginning, the idea of third world countries. Tell me a little bit more about what's more typical.
Yeah, it's really it's the underbelly of society, and it really is not pleasant to talk about. And one of the things we've started to do more and more this year and will continue to as we grow nationally, because there's such a need, is the awareness part of that. I never thought, and that's, I really appreciate you letting us be on the show, because I thought people will just find that through other organizations that are out there. And there are a lot of great organizations that are helping kids they call it aftercare. So, whether they provide housing or foster care or medical treatment or, help them find a job or school. But getting back to what we do, we're really looking at working directly with agencies. So a police department, a sheriff's department, a child protective services, or one of these advocacy groups, they contact us. They're the ones that go down, kick the door down, or somehow come in contact with these survivors, these traffic survivors, and then they bring them out, and the survivors will say, yeah, I want to get help. I want to go back to school. I want to get home. I want to do something different. This is not a good way to live your life. They understand that. And so the problem is with the agencies, they don't have a lot of budget. They don't have a lot of resources to take care of these kids. They have some, but it's not as much as you would think it would be. And so what we're providing is once they're identified, a lot of times they don't have an identification. They don't have an ID. They might be rescued in the middle of the night, literally in their underwear. And so what we want to do is we want to work with the agencies to get them, to get the survivors away from that, what they call the life, the trafficking life, as soon and quickly as possible. We want to just completely separate them from that lifestyle. Because if you don't, again, they don't have any real way to make a living. They don't have anything, so they could go back very easily. The survivor will track them down, or they'll go back to it. So people, you know, sometimes they'll put them on a bus. That doesn't work real well. Sometimes they'll put them in a private car with a ride. Doesn't work real well. So the ability for private aviation, for GA, you know, how quickly we can move from one airport or one city to another, that's what they really are excited about with what we're doing, is providing that service. So.
Yeah, the other thing that you've mentioned that's really interesting about it, and you don't necessarily think about, is that you can't use airlines easily for this.
Yeah,
because of identification, things like that.
Yeah, it's really hard to get someone through TSA that doesn't have an ID. And there are ways, but what I've been told by CPS, it takes usually 6 to 8 weeks to get them through, to get them processed. And again, where are you going to put them? What are you going to do with them? And there are safe houses, there are mechanisms for this, but, you know, depending on the timing, you know, our goal is to get them somewhere safe that they can maybe start over, get their life going again. And a lot of times that's working with other.
Big color, bigger savings. It's Sherwin-Williams biggest super sale. Get 40% off paints and stains October 17th through the 27th with prices starting at $29.39. Whether you're refreshing your interior or exterior, we've got the colors to bring your vision to life. And with delivery, getting everything to your door is easier than ever. Shop online to have it delivered or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details. Delivery available on qualifying orders.
Agencies. So one of the flights we did from Sacramento up to Oregon was a young woman. She had been found by the sheriff's department here in Sacramento. She needed medical care. She was in really bad shape. She was also mentally disabled. So she had all kinds of things going on in her life, but it made things very, very difficult for her. And they were able to find her through some medical personnel that identified her as being trafficked. And the great people that work within the Special Investigations Bureau at the Sheriff's Department identified her. They reached out to her family and to her social worker in Oregon that was helping her. And they called us up and they said, "Hey, Ken, we've got a potential survivor. We want you to fly up to Oregon." And I said, "Okay, you know, this was on a Thursday. I'll never forget. It was on a Thursday evening." I said, "That sounds good. How does next week, maybe Monday or Tuesday, sound? I need to, you know, get some of my pilot friends together here and we'll do it." And they said, "No, you don't understand. I mean, we need to move her like tomorrow, you know, maybe 2 days, but, you know, really 24 to 48 hours is our window of opportunity here to align these things and get them to safety." So that was a big eye opener for us too, is the urgency that it takes to get someone. So we're really on the lookout for pilots because, you know, I've got about 80 pilots right now in the Western states. We're trying to grow that. AOPA did a wonderful article for us. We got some more people out on the East Coast. But again, you'd think that you have 100 pilots, that's a lot of pilots. But again, the timing of it, you know, somebody calls up Monday and says, "We have to fly on Tuesday morning." You know, people are busy and it is difficult. So we're really trying to reach out and get a larger pilot pool as well. But that's the kind of impact it has. It just made a huge, you know, difference. I'd like to just tell you a little bit about the flight. The way this thing works too is once we get the call and we identify the survivor, we have law enforcement people we work with. We have doctors, we have nurses, we have a doctor on our board of directors. And so she set up a questionnaire. So we work with the representative at the agency and, you know, we want to make sure that they're okay to fly in a small airplane. You know, it's different than on an airline. And the services are available. So we want to check for psychological issues or drug, you know, induced issues. If they have any other kinds of trauma that may keep them from flying comfortably on a small GA airplane. And once we go through that vetting process and understand that, then we set up a time. And we always fly with a deputy or a chaperone, a licensed social worker, because we want to keep a sterile cockpit. We really want the pilot to focus on the flight and not focus on, you know, any of the survivor things going on in the back. So we have someone licensed or a deputy that helps, that sits back there and works with the survivor to make sure they're comfortable and, you know, feel good about what's going on. And a couple other things just real quick too, what we found out was we would always, in the charter airplane business, we'd always put a red carpet out for people when they would get on the plane. And, you know, these young people had never had anyone care about them. And what we found was that they really appreciated having someone, wow, I'm going to be a VIP on a private airplane. They have a red carpet. The letters we've received from the agencies and the survivors, the emails, it's unbelievable because no one ever took the time to even care about them or notice them. And just by this thing that I thought, no, this is just something you do for people, you know, when you fly, you want to make them have a good time and feel comfortable, the normal things we would do. And it was amazing. And we started providing these backpacks that have sweatshirts and socks and hats and, you know, some hygiene products because some of these kids don't have anything. So we wanted to give them, you know, a bottle of water, a blanket, something. So wherever they're going to end up, at least they have the basics of clothing and some refreshments, you know, some snacks so that they feel comfortable and those kinds of things in case they don't have any of that going into it. So we provide that as part of the service, you know, through different donors that help us out with those. But everybody that goes on a flight gets that. So those are just some of the characteristics of the flights. And, you know, that I thought I was really proud of that and happy with all of our pilots and our support staff that do these flights because, you know, they came up with these things. And we've had just some great responses from, you know, district attorneys and sheriff's departments and CPS and different folks, you know, advocacy groups. So it's been really rewarding in that way.
It seems like there's some pretty significant distinctions to know about how this program works and what's important about this compared to some of the other very wonderful programs like Angel Flight. I mean, as you mentioned, this is something that where the timing is urgent and has to happen quickly, but it's also something where, from what you're describing, the role of the pilot is a little bit different. You're not necessarily there with lots of connection of making them feel comfortable flying and whatever. You're actually interactions with them can be harmful. You're trying to do your job and get them from point A to point B and things like that. Do I understand that correctly?
Yeah, it is, you know, when we first started to think of a model for this, we definitely looked at Angel Flights. They do an amazing job. And, you know, Angel Flights West is here, you know, I'm in Sacramento, they're in Los Angeles, and we know those folks real well. But we really did a lot of digging. Air Care Alliance is another great organization that's associated with a lot of volunteer pilot organizations that do volunteer flying. And they do a wonderful job, you know, connecting the dots for all these things. But Angel Flights in particular, you know, their model is a little bit different because they'll fly different legs. So, you know, they'll say, well, I have a medical issue and I need to fly, you know, I don't know, I'm in Idaho, I need to go to Stanford. So someone might fly him from Idaho to Nevada and Nevada over to Stanford or something like that. In our case, we didn't feel comfortable doing that. We wanted them to get on the plane from A to B and deliver them safely with one pilot so there wasn't any confusion or changeover. So that's one thing that's different. But, you know, I was down in Los Angeles. Angel Flights recently had their big annual gala. And they were very nice to us to work with us. And I, you know, again, I give a great shout out to them because they've been wonderful to kind of guide us and help us with some things. But it is very much along that. But with going back to the pilots, you know, we're much more confidential. I mean, safety and confidentiality are so important to what we're doing. We never talk. We really don't even know. I mean, we'll get the names of the survivors. We usually get the first name, but we work with the representative, the chaperone from the agency, because we really don't want to know. We don't want to get too personal. We never wanted anyone to feel uncomfortable with, well, why are you asking me the questions? And we really didn't understand what is the trauma. If you can imagine some of these young people being abused up to 20 times per day, some of them are marked, they're tattooed, their ears are clipped, they're burned in a certain way so that they're the property of the traffickers. It's just, these things are just so inhumane. Like, they treat them like animals and they put them in very small areas, you know, to live in these, you know, many people to an apartment, and they have a lot of drug problems and drug issues and alcohol. And so there's all these things going into it that we're very cognizant of and we work with to make sure that they're as comfortable as we possibly can make them. But, you know, we never wanted the pilots to feel uncomfortable or the survivors or anyone to feel uncomfortable. So we keep that sterile cockpit policy. And, you know, with Angel Flights, you know, I know a lot of them. I've seen some of their flights. And sometimes, you know, the pilot will do several flights for someone to help them. In our case, it's more kind of a one-off where we're going to deliver them to safety and freedom, as we like to say. But the pilot doesn't really get to know them. Nobody, you know, other than the social worker or whoever the agency is, they kind of take responsibility of that chaperone. And I think that's a good policy for everybody, from, you know, the safety and confidentiality part for the pilots, for Flights to Freedom. You never know how things, you know, in this world work. So we just want to make sure everybody feels comfortable with that.
Well, it's very much something where, you know you're doing a good thing. You're not there to get thanked by anyone. You're not there to get to know your passenger. You're doing what you're doing.
Right. Yeah. And we've just had some amazing letters. And I think I mentioned to you that one of the things that we didn't foresee was the district attorneys in different counties. We've flown people from Las Vegas up to Santa Clara County or up to Alameda County to testify against traffickers. We had one young woman, when she was trafficked, she was 16 years old. She witnessed one of the traffickers murder someone in front of her. And eventually the district attorney wanted her to come up and testify against the trafficker. So we were able to fly them up, from Southern California up to, I think it was Alameda County for that one. And they were very thankful. But again, this was something that came out of being involved with law enforcement and trafficking, that we had no idea that we were going to fly people to court cases or depositions. But it's been a very good tool. The investigators and the people working with the district attorneys, a lot of times, like we worked on a case with San Jose PD, and, you know, they're just assigned to the district attorney's office as investigators. And so, you know, they don't have a lot of time and a lot of resources. So offering this type of thing to district attorneys to fly people back and forth, it provides a really good service. And the other problem, you know, in this world is compared to the drug world, and there is a lot of drug people that are involved in trafficking. But, you know, the challenges are that the agencies don't have a lot of resources. And the traffickers are very clever. They use technology. They use burner cell phones. It's very hard for law enforcement to actually make an arrest. It's a lot of man hours. It's a lot going into these. And a lot of times they'll go after larger groups in these large sting operations. I want to say earlier this year, we had a sting operation here up in Sacramento, and I think they got over 100 traffickers in one night. Clients. I don't know how many traffickers they got that night, but people that were, you know, doing work, you know, buying sex with young people, you know, and they caught them. So it is very difficult because of the technology. They hide behind technology. And, but I think by offering some of these services to different agencies, district attorneys, I know that's provided an amazing service for them. And they've been so thankful. So we're really happy to provide that the best we can.
Wow. Tell me a little bit about what it takes to help you to be, if someone wants to be a pilot, what type of aircraft are suitable for it? What type of experience is required for someone?
Yeah. So we're, you know, as I said, we're really trying to get the awareness out there about how bad the problem is. And then of course what Flights to Freedom is doing, because we think that will drive more pilots' interest. And you know, being on shows like yours is really helpful. And so what we're doing, if you go to our website, myflightstofreedom.org, there is a pilot section just for pilots. It'll talk a little bit more about what the pilots need, and there's a form there they can fill out. But basically, we're looking for guys that own their own aircraft, or they can rent aircraft. It's fine. They can rent, you know, have rent. They have to have insurance. They have to have a current medical. We like to see them with about 400 hours total time minimum, 300 hours if you have an IFR rating or commercial rating. But those are kind of the minimums. Having the current medical, have 400 total time, have an aircraft that's available to you and that you're willing to spend at least, you know, a half a day. Most of our missions, you know, once you get out, you pre-flight the airplane, you meet the trafficker and get the person from the agency, the chaperone on the plane, you'll go do the flight, you know, and then maybe sometimes you'll fly the agency person back. You know, you're going to spend 4, 5, 6 hours, you know, basically I say it's a full day by the time you, you know, start in the morning and you finish in the evening. Sometimes we've had longer legs where we have to fly, maybe up to 12 hours. We don't want to do more than a 12-hour duty day if possible. There, you know, sometimes there might be an overnight. But again, what we do is we have a pool of pilots. We look at it geographically, kind of take a look at the different aircraft. We take about a 3-hour geographical flight ring around that area. And when we get the call from the agency, we look at, okay, what pilots are in that region that could do it. So it's, you know, we're not going to pull a guy from Sacramento to go do a flight on the East Coast, most likely, although we have had requests to do flights, you know, West Coast to East Coast. It gets a little more tricky. It's a bigger ask in a jet. We have had those, and we have had some success with that. But that's, you know, that's kind of how we're working with the pilots on it. And then we send them an email or we make a phone call. And if they want to do it, you know, whoever steps up, raises their hand, then we give them the flight details and how it's going to play out. And then, you know, they go do the flight from there and it works out. You know, so far it's worked out really well.
Wow. So it sounds from what you're saying, like, I mean, it's pretty open. I mean, someone can do it with 172. Someone can do it who's got 500 hours. Like you're not just looking for people with turboprops. You've got like options available.
Yeah. I kind of think, you know, to myself, minimum, you know, you're going to have a pilot, you're going to have a chaperone, you know, maybe a small bag, a little bit of luggage.
And then you know, 152 is a big ask, but everything.
Yeah, right. You know, so, but, you know, maybe 172, I always kind of think, you know, 182 is probably that, you know, kind of the starting plane, but it just depends, you know, on the flight and the flight time. You know, if we had something from Sacramento down to LA, it's maybe a couple hours in a 172, you know, your probably useful load's probably going to be okay. You know, so again, we kind of, you know, we're going to do some calculations. We have a chief pilot, you know, that looks at it and works with the pilots just to make sure that everybody's comfortable with the flight. And we do a briefing, you know, a pre-flight briefing with everybody involved so that everybody's engaged and involved in that. Mm-hmm. The normal things you do with a safe flight. But, you know, obviously we want to make sure everybody feels comfortable with it. And we don't want to do anything that's going to put anybody at risk in any possible way.
Okay.
You know, with the flight.
But a private rating, don't need commercial, don't need things like that.
All Part 91. So, you know, if you feel comfortable flying passengers, you know, again, we want that sterile cockpit. We don't want people distracted, but it is a good way for guys to build some time up. You know, they can go out. We are an official nonprofit 501c3. So I guess technically, depending on your situation, you can write those expenses off that are involved with the flight. That's completely legitimate.
Big color, bigger savings. It's Sherwin-Williams' biggest super sale. Get 40% off paints and stains October 17th through the 27th with prices starting at $29.39. Whether you're refreshing your interior or exterior, we've got the colors to bring your vision to life. And with delivery, getting everything to your door is easier than ever. Shop online to have it delivered or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details. Delivery available on qualifying orders.
People. So yeah, I think, you know, we're trying to offer a way to make a difference in people's lives that have had a really, frankly, a really bad time. But then, you know, they feel something good about it as well.
And obviously using the term guys, I assume you want everybody from every walk of life.
Course.
Of course.
What
kind of protections are in place for volunteers, for your people that are there to help? I mean, this is obviously you're sort of touching in a criminal element. You're dealing with risk and things like that. What are your answers to that?
You're asking all the great questions. You know, when our board members, we first started this, the board members and some of the pilots are saying, well, you know, these trafficker guys are really bad and there's all these things. And so I said, yeah, you know, I don't know much about that. So one of the things we started to do is we did a lot of research. We had a lot of subject matter experts from other advocacy groups. Every time we have a board meeting every month, we bring in a law enforcement expert, subject matter expert, we bring in a trafficking expert. These are people that are working in this world. One of the Placer County Sheriff's Office up here, they work a lot in hotels, different hotels, and making sure there's no trafficking in hotels. We've had them come out, tell us what to look for, those kinds of things. But getting back to your question, you know, about the safety about this, because it is really important. Again, no one is going to broadcast who's doing these flights for who the people are. So we know that's one safety mechanism that we keep. And the other thing is we've asked every law enforcement, I said, do you feel that we have any real risk here from a trafficker or someone that's going to accept? He said, no, Ken, I think you have very, very little risk. And here's why. One is you're working with law enforcement agencies. You're working with licensed people. You know, and these are armed people on the flights in many cases, if they are a, you know, peace officer. So you have that. So they're going to provide security for the flight. But the thing is, the way that what we've been told by numerous law enforcement and other folks is the traffickers, they don't want the trouble. And they really look, unfortunately, they look at these traffic kids, these survivors. If one runs away, if one gets picked up by police, if one dies, and I'm going to tell you some really, you know, graphic statistics, you know, with these kids, 50% of all of the trafficked people are they're minors, they're young people. 80% of them are girls and young women, And what happens is if they die, if they get into trafficking, they have about a 7 year shelf life, meaning after 7 years, most likely they will not be alive any longer. That's how abusive this can be to them. So we don't feel, based on that, the traffickers just say, up, oh, they ran away, they died, they're gone, whatever. We're not going to chase them around, especially not if law enforcement is involved. They just don't want the visibility. So hopefully that makes people feel comfortable
Yeah.
about.
Does that mean that you don't use like a call sign or anything like that?
Yeah, we can set up a discreet, indiscriminate call sign if we need, or discreet salt sign if we need to for the flight. That is a tool that's a lot, to ours, but we don't, again, talk too much about that because we don't want to let the secret sauce out, but most pilots know that you can change call signs for missions and different things, and we certainly can do that depending on the severity of the case.
Got it.
Yep.
Wow. Well, that's
And I'll say too, I'll say one more thing, Jeff, is, when you go to a private FBO, we don't fly out of, SFO, or, I mean, I guess we could, but you go to a private FBO, where we're going to launch from, we, most people know us and we have a relationship with those folks. They know what we're doing, and people are very helpful with that, and moving people, on and off the tarmac in a very discreet fashion. So people, nobody's really going to have access to anybody.
That makes sense. Absolutely. Tell me, I guess, a little bit more about some of the stories that of things that you've seen. Obviously, with it being very, very sensitive to any private information, but helping people really understand some of the missions, you could kind of give us a peek into.
Yeah, I'd be happy to. So one that we did recently, which was really fun, or it was great to do, was a woman that needed to be transferred from, or it was actually a young woman. She needed to be transferred. I think she was a minor. I want to say 16, 17 years old, and she needed to be transferred from Las Vegas. Somehow they were, she was identified down there, and they wanted to bring her back up to Santa Clara County, where her family was. At least that's the agency. It was San Jose PD that was working on the case, so the DA there. She lived in a different jurisdiction. And again, just for safety and security, we don't, give out any specific details. But what was great about the flight, we had never done this before, is the investigator. She was from San Jose PD, and she had a canine with her, and they have a trained dog, a police dog, a canine that's specific to human trafficking survivors. And you never
Really?
really think about this, but sometimes you fly in a commercial airline and somebody brings their little small dog with them on the flight, and they feel comfortable, they're anxious about flying, they put them in a little, case. So what they did is they said, yeah, a lot of these kids are really, really anxious just about life in general, not just about flying, but just, so whenever they go to rescue a kid, they take a Beltane is the name of the canine. And Beltane goes along with the kid and knows kind of just how to act and what to do. And the dog sits next to the survivor and they can pet, the dog the whole time. And they're trained for this. But I just thought, wow, that was just the greatest thing. And then, of course, everybody in flight said, oh, we need to get a mascot dog that flies with everybody. But I just thought that was the greatest thing. Again, another thing that we had never, we provide the backpack with some supplies and a little teddy bear, that kind of stuff. But I thought that was a wonderful thing, thing that just, it just went really well with the flight, and everybody, the pilot, everybody thought that was so great. I think I might have sent you a few pictures of that
Yeah,
flight,
that's really
And so, but we just, and then again, we received just an amazing letter from the DA in Santa Clara. It just went into such detail about the flight and how important it was that we made that rescue flight. And that's really what it's all about, because as a pilot, we just want to help out and do our part. We're not really looking for an award or a medal or anything. But when you get those letters, you're like, wow, that really made a difference. And so we post those to our website and share those with people. So that was a recent flight that we really enjoyed doing.
Any
And
other like kind of personal stories of things that you've dealt with that that kind of touched you?
We had another young woman that was trafficked when she was 16, I think, between 16 to 17, 18 years old. And we got a call from her mother, who was working with an advocacy group. There's a wonderful advocacy group down in Fresno, California called Breaking the Chains. And they're another one of these groups that help with, aftercare. And there's many different versions of aftercare. There's kind of the, on the front end, there's the education part. There's an amazing group here in Sacramento called Three Strands Global Foundation. And they were put together through an organization because someone was a young girl in El Dorado Hills, California, which is a rather nice area in California, was taken advantage of and was trafficked for a while. And so that organization grew out of that. And so what they decided to do was they decided to do the preemptive strike. They say, we're going to do education. We're going to do written material. We're going to do videos. We're going to try to stop this problem before it happens. And they've been very successful. I believe they're in 38 different states right now. Hmm. They provide any kind of information about how to identify people that are trafficked. What do you do when you find someone's trafficked? How do you care for them? You know, what's the methodology not to be trafficked? They work with different, many, many high schools and different school districts, providing material, educational materials, so the districts and people will know what to look for and what to do if they do find someone. And then Breaking Change does, you know, this is another group in Fresno that does that. But we got a call from them. They're, the mother, you know, had, I think the mother had gotten involved and she was very worried about her daughter and what was going on where she was being trafficked in Southern California. And we had an opportunity through a third party to rescue her. So we flew down, we were able to rescue her. Actually, we took her mother along and a social worker. And, you know, this is one of those things like, oh my goodness, we're taking the mother along, you know, and you'd be amazed at the people that ask us for help. But, you know, that was another one. And when I met the mother and the survivor, you know, you just, your heart goes out to these people because you can just see that they had been through so much trauma that most of us just can't even imagine what these kids are going through and how they're being abused. And so, you know, again, it just makes you feel really good. And, you know, people always ask me, well, you know, how many of these flights are you doing and how frequently are you doing? I said, well, you know, we probably get 3 or 4 calls a month to do a flight. And, you know, probably right now, you know, we're doing about half of them. We don't have the resources. We don't have the pilots available to do every single flight. That's another reason we really want to get out there and get more pilots engaged, get more donors engaged. We want to grow this organization. Right now, everybody from the top down is a volunteer. No one gets paid. We'd love to hire a couple people that could, you know, kind of run it on a more day-to-day basis and expose it to more pilots. But there is an incredible need for these types of services and awareness for trafficking. Really, just like we started off with, we are really just scratching the surface as yeah. a society of how bad this problem is. It's really just been one of those things nobody really wants to talk about. Now there's a national hotline. There's all kinds of resources out there, you know, through Attorney General's office, national hotlines, there's all kinds of agencies and people working on the problem. But I just think in general, it is happening in the big mall that they have, hotels that they have. It's happening in every city, big and small. It's affluent neighborhoods. It's poor neighborhoods. The psychodemographics are everywhere. And I just feel that everybody really needs to step up and think and look at this and see how they can help, you know, on a larger scale.
Well, one of the biggest challenges, I think, in this, in stopping something like this is the kind of thing that can be happening right next to you. And if you're not tuned in to what things could be, you sort of figure, oh, not my problem, or I'm uncomfortable doing something, saying something, talking to maybe bringing it to the attention of someone else. It's really, really interesting and tragic. And as you mentioned, you kind of help in two ways. You help with the organization itself, donating, participating, helping, contributing, all those things. But I think it's important for everyone, no matter what, to have the awareness. And so one of the things to, you know, sort of share here as part of that is something that you give me that has some of these key red flags for people to know. Can you talk to me about this?
Yeah. So what we learned through these subject matter experts and different groups that we had worked with is that there's certain things you can look out for with young people. And, you know, first is there a change? And, you know, I have two daughters and, you know, when you're going through adolescence, you know, they have all kinds of changes. So, you know, you got to kind of be aware of this, but, you know, I'll say two things. The other thing, well, getting back to the red flags, if they come home and they start having different behavioral characteristics, Especially talking more frequently about sex or being more risque in the way that they dress or the people or different people that maybe they're hanging around with. This could be a sign that, you know, maybe something's not quite right or they're being groomed. This is the other big problem. There's a lot of apps out there. We had an amazing thing through the El Dorado County Sheriff's Department. They came out and did a big symposium on all the different things to look for. And some of these apps, people will get on the app and within 24 hours, all the information is gone. So it's hard for law enforcement people to track the traffickers down, but the traffickers will get on, they'll pretend, oh, I'm in a high school. You know, maybe they find out where you go to high school and they go on there. Oh, I'm at this high school. And would you like to go out on a date or do something? And the next thing you know, they're grooming them through some mechanism through different apps online or that kind of thing. So you want to look for, you know, are they being, I guess we'll just say, more sexually risque or dressing in a certain way? Are they hanging out with other or older friends that maybe not normally? Do they have drugs? Are they doing, you know, drugs and this kinds of things? Looking at those, or do they have money in some cases that maybe they don't normally have? You know, or are they on apps that can have this kind of information on them? Because it's really hard to track it and keep track. And again, this is something that all parents, you know, are trying to be more and more aware of. But those are some of the things. But, you know, these people will, the traffickers will go and they'll find someone that lives in another state that, you know, say, hey, I, you know, have a job for you. They'll try to bait them into something. I have a job. Why don't you come out? I have an apartment. You know, you could stay in this apartment. It'll be great. Next thing you know, they pretend to be there dating. And then they're, next thing you know, they want to have some, I want to have some friends over, and, you know, they want you to be nice to them and, you know, do certain things. And what the trafficked person doesn't really understand is they're actually getting these other people that are being portrayed as their friends are actually being paid to come and, you know, they're paying for these opportunities with these young people to be abused. And they don't even know about it until it's too late. And then they get on the drugs and they become very reliant on this lifestyle. And then next thing you know, it's, you know, like I said, they've have, you know, one of these statistics we were told by the Sheriff's Department was just the regular run of the mill trafficker with three people being trafficked can make up to $1 million in cash a year. Wow. With those kinds of things. So it's very, very profitable. And, you know, law enforcement's doing the best they can. But back to your point about awareness, you know, whichever city you're in.
Weight loss solutions are not one size fits all. Hers makes it simpler to get started and stick with a weight loss plan backed by expert guided online care that puts your weight loss goals first. These include oral medication kits or compounded GLP-1 injections. Through Hers, pricing for oral medication kits start at just $69 a month for a 10-month plan when paid in full upfront. No hidden fees, no membership fees. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hers brings expert care straight to you with 100% online access to personalized treatment plans that put your goals first. Reach your weight loss goals with help through Hers. Get started at forhers.com/foryou to access affordable, doctor-trusted weight loss plans. That's forhers.com/foryou, forhers.com/foryou. Paid for by Hims and Hers Health. Weight loss by Hers is not available everywhere. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Restrictions at forhers.com apply.
You know, law enforcement can only do so much and they need to be identified. So if there's a place where you think you're seeing these things, and this isn't typical, you know, like people might know, oh, you know, down at this part of the town, there's prostitution and you see it, you know what's going on. Law enforcement understands that. But what we're talking about, if you see people that definitely look underaged, you know, and they're with older people and they're doing, you know, doing things that don't look normal, you know, you definitely want to call your, you know, law enforcement or someone to get help to investigate that, because it's the only way the law enforcement are going to know. And my experience has been, at least in Northern California, anytime we've asked for help, everybody is right there to help us. You know, they want to stop this as much, and they're looking for tips as well on the law enforcement side.
You know, my very good friend, Brian Schiff, who we do a show together, Cockpit to Hell, just told me a story. He had a save on one of his flights, an airline flight. Recently.
Oh, yeah.
And that was a case where there was a young girl who was with two adults on the flight that she wasn't very responsive. They were answering. She seemed like a little out of it, and they were the ones doing all the communication of drinks or this or anything else, and speaking for her and covering all this. And the flight crew, the cabin crew, noticed that and looked up and realized they were on separate itineraries, all three of them, and found these red flags, alerted the crew and the flight crew. And the flight crew worked with dispatch, who contacted the FBI and was able to research all this during the flight, so that as soon as they landed, they were intercepted, and that's exactly what it was. So this can happen anywhere.
And the good news is, I think all the major airlines that I'm aware of, they do training now for the flight crews and cabin crews, for everyone to identify just what you're talking about. You know, is someone kind of being not really able to communicate, you know? And you'll see more and more, especially I've seen this in different restaurants and bars and things. I don't know if the airlines are doing it yet, but they're this 1-800 national hotline for anti-trafficking number. I've seen that now in the women's restrooms. Mm-hmm. You know, I haven't seen it, but my wife will say, oh, by the way, you know, the women's room, or sometime in the men's room, you'll see these, you know, say, are you being, you know, trafficked? Call this number, we'll help you, you know, these kinds of things. And trying to get out of it. But, you know, hotels are doing the same thing. Hotel staff are now being trained of what to look for. I know in Texas, they have a thing. If you own a bar, you're required to take so many hours of training to look for kids that are being trafficked or people that are being trafficked. So, it's out there.
The other thing you mentioned, obviously, the predominance of this is with women, young girls, and sex trafficking, et cetera. But it's not, as you mentioned in the beginning, limited to that. It is it is also very prevalent in labor, with boys and young men, and the whole concept of essentially enslavement through this. And I think that's important when someone even hires someone to work on their house. You start seeing someone that something doesn't add up in the way they're being controlled by people around them, or not able to engage for themselves or anything like that. You start to, someone on every angle needs to be able to reach out and spot cases where someone says they're coming either to the country or just within the country to get work. And in the end, it's not that.
Yeah. And I think that's why California, if it's not the worst, it's one of the worst states for trafficking. I mean, we have these major arteries. We have, you know, freeways that go north and south, east and west, you know, across the state. It's a large state. So there's lots of different types of populations in different areas. And, you know, then it's the proximity to the border, you know, the southern border. And there's a lot of things going on down there, you know, and I know that, you know, the people down there, Border Patrol, and everybody's working really hard to stop this. But, you know, people are getting across and being trafficked. And this is kind of that larger problem we were talking about. When you say the word human trafficking, you know, we kind of got into this through young people being sex trafficked, and that was really our focus on it. But of course, you know, we're here to help anybody, really. But, you know, when you talk about human trafficking, 50 million people are being trafficked, in, you know, globally. You think about it, that's just an amazing number of people. And you're like, well, how in the world could that be? But then when you start to, you know, dice it down into the weeds here a little bit, what you find is there are many, many countries where they use young people or forced for military service. So here's a gun, you're going to go to military service. And if you don't, guess what? You're going to disappear. And then there's organ harvesting, where they take your organs and sell your organs, and these people are being trafficked. And of course, there's the sex trafficking on all kinds of levels. There's the forced labor part of it. There's forced marriage part of it. But all of these parts of it, you know, are all under the umbrella of human trafficking. But, you know, you think about it, you hear these things, you say, where in the world is this stuff going on? But, you know, if you start digging into it, do more research, look it up online, you'll find out it's happening right here in the United States. And this is another one. There's a lot of law enforcement funding from a state and federal level that's coming into law enforcement now on the labor part of it. There's a lot more and more forced labor going on in the U.S. And I know that's another big one that, you know, from a federal and state level, they're trying to fund for law enforcement to stop that as well. You know, in addition to the sex trafficking, but those are kind of the two big ones in the U.S. But it's everywhere, it's globally, and you know, I think it's 80 or 90% of the kids that are trafficked, it's someone they know. So it's and this is going to sound crazy, and I'm going to tell you a little story about a family, you know, you say, well, it's the aunt, it's the uncle, it's somebody in the family. Some of those cases the FBI told us about in the Philippines, these are relatives. This is an aunt and uncle and says, hey, I can get, you know, so-and-so on a TV show. Can I take them, you know, down here, downtown for, you know, the afternoon, the evening? And they're really trafficking the kid. They're not putting them on. And then they bring money back, a little bit of money back for the parents. And apparently nobody knows what's going on, is an example. We got a call from Washington State, a woman who had been trafficked, married her husband, and he trafficked her. And then they had two children. They trafficked the children. And this is, you know, it just sounds crazy. And then they wanted a flight. They wanted to escape and get a flight to the East Coast. They had found a safe house, you know, but you just think about these things and it's heartbreaking. You can't imagine that, you know, who would have kids and traffic their own children. But again, to the point, it's happening everywhere. Yeah. It's all around us. And I think that we just have to, you know, find resources to help people so they can get out of that life. And obviously this is a societal thing. It's a humanitarian crisis, in my opinion, you know, because nobody really knows about how bad it is, but it's out there happening every day.
Yeah. And I can imagine it's tied to runaways and things that within the United States. And as you mentioned, this is not just a border problem issue. This is not just a third world country issue. This is not just whatever. This is very, very much something happening. I'm going to guess from what I've read and the information that you've given me that for most folks sitting there watching this show right now, hearing this right now, that the chances that there's something in their local area happening, at least one individual, are high.
It is. Yeah, it is high. And again, these things happen at different locations throughout any city. And, you know, and the other thing, like, you know, there's a thing up here, what they call in law enforcement, called the blade. And the blade refers to the trafficked area or the geography of it. So in Northern California, the traffickers, you know, they might start in Sacramento and they'll work here for a week or two. And then when things start to get heated up with law enforcement cracking down, they'll move down to Oakland, San Francisco Bay Area. And then when that gets going, they'll move down to Los Angeles or San Diego, or they move over to Las Vegas or to Reno, you know, and they just have this blade and these traffickers just move around. And, you know, and it's just, you think, wow, does this really go on? Just, yep, it certainly does. This is happening all the time. We have some friends at an airport, at an FBO, and they called me up and they said, Ken, you know, I've been seeing this plane come in. It comes in every couple of weeks with a bunch of, you know, young women. And a few kind of shady looking characters, and then they get in rental cars and they all drive away and they come back, and you know, the girls are never allowed to come in and talk to any, and it's unusual because at an FBO you go and use a restroom, you know, said nope, you know, it's all locked down, they bring the rental cars out and take them. And so we were, you know, trying to share this with some law enforcement so they could investigate. And my understanding is these were people that are being, you know, actually flown into private FBOs being trafficked. And then, you know, but, you know, we're just trying to let everybody know these things are going on. So again, from the pilot community, if you're out there at your airport and you're seeing strange things, you know, like this going on, you know, please, please notify law enforcement. They do want to get involved. They do want to help. I mean, this is one of those things that everyone I've known in law enforcement, they really want to stop this. This is high on their level, their, you know, list of things that they want to stop.
Yeah. Wow. Well, that definitely makes a lot of sense, to say the least. So recap for me, obviously your mission and the mission of Flights to Freedom is to be able to do that urgent transportation, very, very timely, to get someone to safety with the assistance of law enforcement in that quick 24, maybe 48 hour time window. So for anything. So tell us how to find you. And how people can get involved either to fly, to support in some other way directly through their time, or to donate in order to help.
Yeah, so our website is probably the first stop, and that's myflightstofreedom.org, my, flightstofreedom.org. And on there, there's a just a generic email, which is info@myflightstofreedom.org, which will get you to us. And that's the easiest way. Like I said, there's the pilots page. And if you scroll down a little bit on that pilots page, There's some information on there about how to get involved if you're a pilot, and it gives you some more details. There's a form, an online form to fill out, just so we kind of know who you are. And so you kind of have to jump through a few hoops. Again, we want to make sure we're getting people that are really interested. So there's a little bit of a form there to fill out at myflightsoffreedom.org. We have donation page. We have different places throughout the website. We have QR codes that go directly to our PayPal. And if anyone would like to make a donation, you can scan the QR code. You can go to our donate page on myflightsoffreedom.org and make direct donations there. If you want to get in touch with me, my email is myf2f.org. We have it different on for board members, but ken@myf2f.org, or you can go to info@myflightsoffreedom.org. That'll get to me. And, but again, that website, myflightsoffreedom.org, is probably the best place to start and really learn about the organization. Provide a safe, expedient way using general aviation to help transport these victims of sex trafficking, human exploitation, and any support groups. So we help a lot of the support groups that are involved, whether they're law enforcement or CPS, district attorneys, other advocacy groups. We support all of them. We work really well together because we really are one of the few organizations that are providing just the ride. You know, we just say we're here to do the flights. We're here to rescue and reunite. We don't get in the aftercare. We do the flights and we move on to the next one. And we really were laser focused like that for a reason, because we just didn't have the resources to do more. We didn't want to take on too much. We want to do the one thing we want to do really, really good is provide a safe, confidential flight for everyone that's involved in our organization.
Well, it's an amazing mission. I'm really, really impressed with the work that you're doing and grateful for it. I think it's just so important, and I can't think of something more impactful or more important that a private pilot could do with their day or their flight than to go save someone with one of these flights.
Yeah. Well, thank you for saying that. And you know, I've been involved in aviation for a long, long time. And I've made a career of it. I have some really wonderful friends in it. And just again, a shout out to the AOPA folks and EAA people and everybody at NBAA. They've all been just so receptive to what we're doing and been so helpful to us and many, many other groups, but you know, some of the major ones. And we're going to be out at Oshkosh with a tent hopefully this summer, which will be another opportunity just to meet with people and talk to pilots and different things. But you can always find us again on myflightsoffreedom.org. And we really look forward to continuing our work and to work with, you know, general aviation pilots. It's an amazing group of people. And what I found, it's like law enforcement and the work we've done there with the flying community, the general aviation, just such good-hearted people that want to help people in general. And I think I couldn't ask for a better group of people to do this type of mission and help us with our mission, because their heart's in the right place. So anyway, thank you, Jeff, so much. We're so grateful for you and letting us come on your show and, you know, the support everybody's been giving us. We're just really humbled by all that. And
thank you. Well, I'm very, very grateful for the work that you're doing, and I appreciate you taking time to join us on the show. So thanks very much. We'll be sure to continue to send people your way and spread the word through Social Flight in every way possible. Recording of this program will be available. We'll promote that. We'll get everything we can. But again, Ken Lux, Flights to Freedom. And again, it's the website, just to be really clear, it's myflightstofreedom.org. Myflightstofreedom.org to get to the correct website for that. And you can find out how to help. You can reach out. You can talk to Ken or many of the other folks that are over there. And really, this is, you're talking about a new organization, an age-old problem, and something that's very, very serious. This is a way you at home can reach out and help. And so I definitely encourage everyone to do it. So Ken, thank you so much for taking time to join us this evening. And I look forward to doing more work directly with you to help everything that you're doing.
Very much appreciated, Jeff. And thank you for having me on tonight. It's been really fun. And what a great platform you have. And really, thank you for Social Flight and everything you're doing. It's really been fun this evening. Thank you.
You're very welcome. Have a good evening.
Good night.
And thanks to all of you for everything that you do to support general aviation and for taking time out of your evening to join us here again on Social Flight Live. We'll be off next week traveling around the country, but back The following week, that's July 1st, Tuesday, July 1st, with Cirrus Aircraft President Todd Simmons. He has got an amazing life story. I've spent quite a bit of time with Todd, and you're really going to enjoy that show, learn what's happening there, what's next, his really fascinating personal story, and so much more. And then on Tuesday, July 8th, we're here with the Cockpit to Cowl show, separate show. So you register at cockpittocowl.com for that. That's my show with Brian Schiff, where we talk about both the mechanical aspect of the aircraft and the flying aspect of the aircraft between Brian and myself. And we're going to be talking about fuel management and mysteries, all sorts of things fuel related, whether it be new unleaded fuel developments and things happening with that, techniques for managing fuel in your aircraft, issues you need to look at for your own maintenance, you name it, you're going to learn it as much as we can possibly pack into one evening. And so again, that's cockpit, the number two in the word cowl.com. And you can join us there on that show. Until next time, thank you so much again. I'm Jeff Simon for Social Flight, and I wish you all blue skies.